It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Show. I'm your host, Derek Brown, and with me, as always, the Minnesota Madman himself, Thor Nystrom. And on today's show, we are going to dive deep into the tight end class. We're going to wade into the waters of these options that can block and not only perform as receivers. Thor? Dude, we kind of buried this. I mean, we've had shows of John Middlecoff. We've talked quarterbacks. We've talked running backs. We've talked wide receivers. And now we're at the tight ends, baby. So we get to shed some love on Brock Bowers today, man. You hyped?
I'm very hyped. Yeah, you know, we teased this a little bit during the Middlecoff episode. And during that, and if people haven't listened to that yet, please go back and listen to it. We had a great hour with John. But we started talking about some of these tight ends and teased that we were going to be doing this next week. This is the week, and we are about to deep dive that tight end class. I'm very excited to do it.
Absolutely, man. And look, per usual, so we're going to dive through the top 10 of this class per NFL mock draft database.com. So starting this off, baby. The top, well, I'll put it this way. The bottom four of this top 10 are, I'm not going to say they're polarizing, but I think they have various levels of fantasy utility. Some of these guys stand out, and I don't want to take too much time because the top six of this class is really the meat and potatoes, or if people are looking for the guys that can really ascend to being a second or maybe third option in a passing attack, those are the guys we really want to kind of stretch our legs on. So we're going to bring up this top 10 of this class, run through tight ends 7 through 10, and kind of talk about really quickly where we have them ranked and what we see for them in the NFL. So tight end 10, starting this off, Jared Wiley out of TCU. Tight end 9 per consensus is Jaheim Bell. Tight end 8 is the blocking maestro himself, AJ Barner out of Michigan. Tight end 7 is Dalvin Holker. Thor, out of these four guys, who do you think has to be talked about here?
Dalvin Holker, I think. For me, on my rankings, he is the guy that is outside those six that, you know, that you just brought up as being the really interesting ones in this tight end class. But I think Holker outside of that is the one that fantasy guys need to keep an eye on. He's headed for an H-back role in the NFL, 6'3.5", 241, 6.07 RAS. I know that he has the skill. That is very apparent on his tape. The question becomes, does he have the physical ability to become moving the needle as a pass catcher in the NFL, which is what we would care about from a fantasy perspective. He is not explosive. He's sluggish changing directions, and he needs some space to build up to his top speed. He's also one of the class's oldest players. So that's the downside. The upside is the skill part I was talking about, extremely skilled, specifically for our purposes, catching the ball. That is the thing that he does the best. He attacks it at its earliest point. He fluidly transitions into running. He's one of those guys, he'll catch it, doesn't lose momentum when he's on the move or when he makes himself available to the quarterback in zone, just quickly transitions to being the runner, and he starts breaking tackles then. So even, you know, with the lack of, quote unquote, lack of athleticism, he's a tackle breaker. He also will catch the ball in a crowd. Very, very good concentration. Last year, 10 contested catches for Hulker. That was two more than any tight end in this draft class. He's not a bursty mover, but he is an efficient one. He understands efficiency of footwork, for instance. He does the best with what he has. His routes lack snap and pizzazz, but he augments that with tempo changes, upper body dekes. You know, it reminded me a little bit of watching from the receiver class, Ricky Pearsall, and all the stuff that he does, changing tempos and then deking the, he'll do head dekes. He will deke his shoulders and then he'll go the other way. Just anything he can do to sort of set the defender up to think he's going a different way than he's actually going. And then the clever footwork. That is how Hulker buys separation. And while he's small, there is a quirk about his physical dimensions that I think needs to get talked about a little bit more with regards to the receiving skill. Again, the kid's only 6'3 and a half, 241. And again, you know, not super athletic, but he has very, very long arms, especially for someone who is that size. In fact, he has the longest arms of any of my tight ends ranked in the top 15 on my board. And, you know, you're talking about some big dudes there, right? I mean, like, including Brevin Span Ford, the six, almost seven, 260-pound guy. Barner, 6'6". Tip Raymond, 6'4 and a half, 271. Wiley, 6'6". He has longer arms than all of them, which gives him a bigger catch radius, which plays up Hulker's greatest strength. Again, those ball skills. He has really, really good hands, and he's fluid at that catch point. So between having a catch radius of an octopus. So he's going to catch the ball, going to transition into a runner where he is very effective. And I think as a blocker, he's at least a gnat. Like, and he's also, good space blocking. Any guy who is around, his physical dimensions are lower, he's going to get them blocked for you. He is obviously not an inline guy. He would get ragdolled by power edges in the NFL. That is why he has to be the H-back guy. But for an offense that uses 12 personnel and then throws to that H-back guy, likes to shift that dude around and then get him involved in the routes, I think Hulker could play at that. And I think he is skilled enough where he could play early on as a pass catcher in the NFL, despite his physical limitations.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the physical limitations and his dimensions. I mean, the dude has 33 5/8-inch arms. That's 77th percentile. That's like talking about, just to put that in context for people, he has the arm length of an NFL guard, almost to the extension of being an NFL tackle. That's how long this dude's arms are. So that really shows up as far as like on his film when he's catching balls outside of his frame and the catch radius itself. Now, I'll push back a little bit because I did find this interesting when I was watching him yesterday in preparation for the show. He is not an athletic freak by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, that shows up in a 24th percentile 10-yard split. But where you do see as an underneath weapon, like, I don't think he's ever going to be a massive yak weapon. I don't ever think he's going to be a guy that we're asking to, or an NFL team is asking to stretch the seam. But can he operate as an underneath weapon on outs, screens, operate versus zone? Because while most of his testing metrics weren't fantastic, he did log a 94th percentile 3-cone and an 83rd percentile 20-yard shuttle. So there is some short area quicks there to work with at his size that would allow him to be deployed in that way. But again, is he going to be a guy that's generating a ton of missed tackles forced? No. Is he going to generate a ton of yak? No. Is he going to stretch the seam? Probably not. If he does that, I promise you, a linebacker or a nickel is going to be in his back pocket. That's a guaranteed. But as a guy like, look, he has a strong set of hands, man. So, I think he's probably, like, where do you think he goes in the NFL draft, Thor? Probably, what, round 5, I'm guessing?
I was going to toss out 5. And, yep. D-Brody, to the point about the, you know, the 3-cone and the shuttle, the thing that I saw about his routes where, you know, with the change of direction, mm-hmm. that perhaps it becomes just a thing more that he needs to work on as opposed to something he's not capable of. I see at the route break, those kind of routes that you're talking about, I see more rounded route breaks from him. And And perhaps that isn't, you know, I was talking about the overall efficiency of his movement into routes, off the line, getting into it like that. But that's one where if you do have that change of direction, we need at that moment for it to start getting precise and then break that thing off flat. We want the clean corners like origami. We don't want that rounded stuff anymore, because that's one thing where in the NFL, you were able to get separation despite that in the MWC. This is one area where all of a sudden that could start going away if he doesn't improve on that. But it's a great contextual point.
No, I definitely agree, man. You do not see explosiveness in and out of his routes. And I adamantly agree. The other guy out of this group that I want to highlight here is Jaheim Bell. And I've seen a lot of stuff out on social media, Thor. Like, I've talked about him. We talked about him before we went to Senior Bowl. And I said, look, you and I were on a phone call, and I said, Jaheim Bell is really interesting, man. Like, his analytical profile jumps off the freaking page. In two of the last three seasons, this is a guy who has finished top 20 in what I care about as far as receiving utility. 13th in yards per route run last year, 18th in PFF receiving grade. 2021, he was top 10 in both of those metrics. You look over the last 3 years, minimum of 20 targets. He is ranked inside the top 12 in every single season in yak per reception and missed tackles forced. So there is a skill set that could translate to the NFL. My question at his size and dimensions, because I'll give this. Jaheim Bell's agent and the people representing him and stuff like have done a pretty good job of kind of like the variance and where his measurements have been. Has he been consistently weighing in like somewhere in the 240 range? Yes. His height is where I've got questions, man. Senior Bowl, he measured in at 6'1 and some change, like almost 6'2, but not. He goes to the combine, and apparently he grew a few inches. Well, not inches, but partially, like, he measured in at 6'2. The reason I bring this up, dude, is because if you look back over years and years and years of the NFL, asking a guy at these dimensions to be a standout receiving option, you're asking him to be an outlier from the word go. And can he do that? Because he got used in the slot, he got used out wide, he can run routes, he's a tough guy to bring down on the open field. So there is receiving utility to like there. But look at this, Thor, let me just toss this at you, man. Since 1966, all tight ends that are 6'2" or shorter and weigh anything south of 260 pounds, okay? The number of guys that have finished their career with at least 10 PPR points per game, looking at this from a fantasy angle and talking about what, because that's what he's being talked about in, and the fantasy lens and his receiving upside. The only four guys to finish their career with at least 10.7 or higher PPR points per game are Aaron Hernandez, Carroll Dale, who in 1966, nobody's going to know who that name is, Jordan Reed, and Shannon Sharp. So it's, you're asking Jaheim Bell, if he hits at the NFL, to be somewhat of a unicorn. And I don't know if he can do that. That's asking a lot. So I'm not telling people that he cannot do it. I'm also not telling people that he doesn't have a lot of things in his analytical profile and the physical testing to like. But still, we have to contextualize, as a player at his size playing tight end, if he hits, could it be magnificent? Possibly. But we're talking about a span since 1966. Four guys hit that, Thor. Four guys. So it's not like we have a huge sample to work with. So yes, if he hits, he will be an outlier. All right, Thor, so we kind of lopped off the bottom end of this class, tight end 7 through 10 there, the guys that stand out. And look, no, I didn't talk about A.J. Barner. I think he is going to be a fantastic blocking tight end, but I don't see a lot of receiving utility at the next level for him. One of our favorite prospects, though, is up next, baby. He's on deck. Tight end 6, per consensus, is Eric All. And both of us, like, look, on the My Guys episode with John Middlecoff, people are going to go check that episode out. You and I were fighting before that show about who was going to get to talk about Eric All and his illustrious career. I'm going to let you lead this off, man.
Yeah, Eric Awe, a guy who comes from Michigan initially, one tight end factory that we have in college football. Then he transferred to Iowa, the other big one that we got in the Midwest, tight end factory. And in so doing, we got to see him in a couple different roles, and he excelled at both of them when he was on the field. At Michigan, prior to going to Iowa, he was the move guy, and they would move him around and then target him in the passing game. And then at Iowa, he played straight in line. And again, was good out, deployed as both. I love the receiving utility with Eric Awe. And I think that's where, for fantasy guys, you can get excited about him. This tight end class, we always talk about Brock Bowers. And then the way it was heading into the process, it was like, you know, it's Bowers, obviously, tight end one with a bullet. Then it's Jatavion Sanders, tight end two with a bullet. And then it's like, then we have a couple other guys that are vaguely interesting. And then no one else you need to pay attention to. Eric Awe was not talked about much. And you and I obviously disagreed with that. Eric Awe, he's a guy where context explains the reason why his career in college didn't go maybe the way that otherwise that he had the physical ability to do. He obviously had an ACL tear in October of his first, you know, last year at Iowa. And he also had season-ending back injury at Michigan in 2022. And that thing, not only did the 2022 back injury cut his season early that year as well, but it also led to his departure from Michigan. There was a disagreement about the back surgery that he ended up having. Eric Awe elected to have that. You know, and of course, that's what cut the season short. Then he ends up leaving because, you know, in part because of this disagreement. We don't know exactly what was operated on when he had that back surgery. It's one of those things as the public, you know that he had that surgery, but you don't know exactly, you know, what was done inside of there. That would be interesting to know, of course. NFL teams' medical department will know that. And that's something where it's going to inform the risk of re-injury going forward. Is this something that is constantly going to be with him? Is it something that's theoretically possible to totally get over? If it is, and he is going to be healthy in the NFL, I just tell everyone out there right now, Eric Awe will be the steal of this tight end class. If we knew that he was going to be healthy, because this guy has the athleticism, the body type, and then the receiving skill. Those three things, very few tight ends in this class can match. You're obviously Bowers at the top. Then you start talking about the other guys. In those three categories, Eric Awe already is right dang near the top of it. And, you know, you see this with – you saw it at Michigan. You've seen it last year at Iowa when he was on the field. You know, and even going back to 2021, he had 38 catches, 437 yards in two touchdowns in his last year at Michigan. It was fully healthy, but going all the way back to 2021, love his combination of size, speed, feet, 6'4 and a half, 252. D-Bro, you can tell him in a second about the guys that on tape that you have seen him outrun and what their verified 40 times are, trying to gauge Eric Awe's 40 time because obviously he didn't get the pre-draft test. But I also, I think he would have tested very, very well in the splits. I think he would have been one of the faster tight ends in this class. He also is you know, we were talking about Holker and the thing about the change of directions and then how that manifests at the route break. Eric Awe, you don't have to question that at all. He's a quick direction changer and this is very important for gaining separation, especially heading into the next level when you start to project it. He accelerates quickly out of those route breaks and returns to top speed very quick. Again, for a tight end, that stuff you're looking for, especially in this down tight end class, you can obviously line them up everywhere. One little nitpick is he does have some concentration drops on film, but that's about all I got with his ball skills. He has very good ball skills. And then the other thing, he lacks the play strength as far as projecting maybe full inline duties at the next level, although he does give you effort as a blocker. It's just one of those things, you know, again, the bigger power edges could have their way with him. But I think you could have him a deployment partial time inline, partial time. You could put him in the slot if you want to for 5% of the snaps. You kick him out wide as well. There's no problem with that. You can also have him as a lead blocker. I mean, that's a guy you can motion into the backfield if you want. If on a given play, you want to have a lead blocker going up into the hole, get some short yardage. I think that this guy is a big-time sleeper, D-Bro.
Dude, he's one of my favorite players of this class. Like, I want to put some major respect on Eric Awe's name. And I'm going to throw this take out there, Thor, and We have not talked about this coming on before we turn the mics on and stuff. I want to tell the people out there right now, if Eric Aall would have been fully healthy and not torn his ACL this year, he would be the unquestioned, undisputed tight end two of this class. And people might find that spicy, man. But here, just let me run through this. And then if you're listening to this episode, you can eye roll all you want to at that take. Just sit down, pour yourself a drink, and listen to this. Before Eric Aall left last season with an injury, with the ACL tear, before being sidelined, he was 7th in receiving yards amongst all tight ends. He was 11th in missed tackles forced. You look at the last two seasons where he played and saw at least 20 targets. So not 2022 because of the back injury. 2021 and 2023. He ranked top 10 in yards per route run amongst all FBS tight ends with at least 20 targets in both of those freaking seasons, Thor. You look at last year before, or at least last year in its totality, overall, and this is a metric that I brought up if people want to go back and think about, why were we so high on Sammy Ballgame? Why were we so high on Sam Laporta's game and transitioning with a receiving utility to the NFL? People are getting tired of hearing this metric out of my mouth, but it translates and it's real, dude. Eric Aall last year, amongst all tight ends with at least 10 man coverage targets, he was 1st in yards per route run against man coverage, 8th in PFF receiving grade against man coverage. He can win on the slot or if you bump him out wide. He is a move tight end. He is a weapon. And yes, to your point, we don't have athletic testing. But if you go back to the film and the thing that I threw out on X, and I tweeted this out so people can go check it out, man. Kalen King, if you go back to 2021 versus Penn State, and I know this is very nitpicky, but we're trying to understand what type of athleticism this dude has, because obviously with the ACL, he's not able to test. In 2021, he took a screen pass and burnt Kalen King to the corner and started pulling away. Why does this matter? Kalen King ran a 4.61 at the NFL Combine and in high school. At his pro day, he ran a 4.52. Now, say what you want about pro day times. We bashed them on the show. They can be, look, take them with a grain of salt. But even if we take it at the basement market value of, okay, it's a 4.6. So we're saying Eric Aall was beating a corner in the open field and pulling away from him that runs a 4.6, tried and true tested. If you want to bump that up to a 4.5, okay, fine. But what we're talking about here is Eric Aall, with this and using this as context, would have what, Thor? 4.6 speed at his basement, 4.5 probably, maybe even 4.4 if he dropped a little bit of weight. I don't think any of that's impossible.
King at the very worst is 4.6 flat, even absolutely. If we think that there was big time exaggeration there. And Eric Aall is faster than Kalen King.
Yes.
Just watch it. Watch it. It's right there. This is not like an opinion.
Kalen
King had his shot, and he lost the foot race to Eric Aall. Exactly. And D-Bro, like to the point about the 40 time, the guy that we talked about in this class who had the best testing with the tight ends of these top guys, Theo Johnson ran a 4.57. I'll tell you this right now. If Eric Aall had tested the same day, Theo Johnson would not have had the fastest 40 time of those tight ends. Sir. He was beating a 4.57 for sure. Would it have been low 4.5s or would it – would it have been mid four? I don't know, but it would have been better than 4.57. I can tell you that for sure. And D-Bro, you did a great job of introducing some of that context. Let me give you a little bit more just to show how impressive it was, the numbers that D-Bro just mentioned last year at Iowa. And D-Bro, you remember, we went a lot into the context of the Iowa Hawkeye offensive situation, environment, when we were talking about Sammy Ballgame.
It's not pretty, baby. It's not pretty.
And I hate to do it as someone who went to Iowa, but you have to give the context to show people how impressive it was, what Eric Aall was doing. His first 6 games in that system, Iowa last year, they averaged 118 passing yards per game. Per game. God. D-Bro, their completion percentage as a team was 48.9%.
Good Lord.
You look at the average yards per catch of their top guys. So the top receivers, 8.2 yards per catch, 6.2 yards per catch, 9.8 yards per catch. So that was the top 3 Iowa receivers in terms of catches. Eric Aall, 14.2 yards per catch. on an offense that stunk with quarterbacks that couldn't get them the ball, the guy who came in and then was playing the whole season, this Deacon Hill guy, he ends with 1,152 passing yards, 4.6 adjusted yards per attempt, and a 5-8 TDINT rate. Eric Hall was making stuff out of nothing. Who does this remind you of? Mr. Laporta the year before. Now, they're different players for sure, but Eric Hall was brought in to be that. We are losing the source of our offense. We need to find a guy who will be that for next year, because obviously the quarterbacking wasn't going to be changing too much, the quality of it at least. The offensive line was more or less the same. The running backs were the same. They were like, we need to get Eric Hall. And he was for those first six games till he got injured in the seventh one. That on the surface, it might not look as impressive. You put it in the context where it occurred, and then you know what he did at Michigan. You know the kind of recruit he was. You see the kind of athlete he is on the field. We don't need the pre-draft testing. This guy, huge sleeper, like I said.
Dude, I love him. He's my favorite tight end of this entire class, both where people are going to be able to, like, or NFL teams are going to be able to draft him. And I'm going to throw this on top. I have not heard your comp for Eric Hall, but I'm going to lay this into you, Thor. I'm going to use a former Iowa player as my comp. And it's not Sammy Ballgame, man, but it is Noah Fant.
Oh, I like that. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, baby.
In fact,
are you going to steal that one? Are you stealing it live on air?
I might steal that one live on air. That's really good. So right now I got Austin Hooper.
But I feel blasphemous. Like, give him Fan.
Yeah, no. Fan is better. Yes, that's what's occurring. Yes. I'm stealing that one right now. This typing you're about to hear is me putting Fan into
it. I love that we got this on air.
Yeah,
I absolutely love this because this happens on a daily basis off air. So I love the fact that we actually capture this on air. But speaking of things that you need to be capturing and diving into, man, Reality Sports Online. By now, I know most of you have probably already heard of Reality Sports Online, the powerful fantasy platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy teams just like an NFL general manager. But have you tried it? It's time to go see what all the buzz in the Dynasty community is about. Free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags, contract extensions, first-round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and so much more. It's not complicated. It just takes another layer of strategy. If you think you're among the fantasy elite, you got to try this out today. Test out your GM skills for free in a mock free agency auction right now. Use the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. That's the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount for your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at realitysportsonline.com. All right, baby, we are cracking into the top five of this tight end class. Thor, I'm pretty high on this dude. Like, I'm kind of surprised he's at tight end five, man. You might be a little bit interested to know where my ranking of him is. And just to back this train up just for a second, putting the further respect on Eric Hall, he is my tight end four of this class. But another guy that needs people's respect as the tight end five per consensus, right now he is my tight end two of this class, Thor, Ben Sinnott. Give me your thoughts, man. Baby.
Oh, my thoughts, he's consensus tight end five.
Consensus tight end five, and I think it's wrong. I talked about him on our guys episode with Middlecoff, but I didn't get to hear your thoughts on him.
Yeah, well, first thought is that's a ludicrous ranking.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
Disrespectful. Yep. And so my ranking, to wrap it with Eric Hall, I have him four, but very close to a guy that we're going to be talking about in a second where
yep.
Eric Hall might even end up my process is tight end three.
Same.
Like my tight end three and four are right neck and neck. But Ben, is it Sinnott or Sennett?
We're gonna have to get a clarification on this because
we gotta get a clarification.
I feel like I
say it both ways.
I feel like I say it both ways, depending on the show and depending on the week and depending on what videos I've watched or trying to figure it out. So we'll just go with Ben. How about that?
Okay, we'll go with Ben. No disrespect to the kid. I'm
He's
totally
awesome.
With you on this, and I'm in a second here. I'm gonna say something where I'm gonna have to see if you think I'm going too far. But just to set it up with Ben from Kansas State, 6'4", 250 pounds, 9'7", 3 RAS. he has had a really good process, particularly the athletic testing opened eyes. I understood-ish why maybe some people were sleeping on him in advance of that. Once you prove the athleticism at that size, I don't know what else there is to talk about. The kid's tape is really, really good. The only thing you can nitpick him about at this point, as far as like no star recruit, but everything's there. He worked his way up here, has the frame, has the athleticism, obviously high effort combo tight end with ball skills and athletic fluidity. He got heavy snaps in line at Kansas State, so you know that he can do that. He can also be comfortably deployed in the slot or offset. Eager blocker who gets to work. I love that lunch pail type style of his game. For sure you're going to get the receiving utility. We'll talk about that in a second. But I love that he gets after it every play, whether it's going after the edge as the inline guy, whether you saw a lot of Kansas State shifting him around the formation, and then it was like where he would end up. It's like he has a target for the, you know, hit in the run game. You got to go out and pick that dude off. Always did. Like that guy was like, oh, I don't want Ben coming after me, you know, on the second level. It was like looking back and Waterboy's playing fullback now. Like you're about to get run over with him. You got your hands full because, you know, and it's like the other stuff of like 15 yards down the field with the leading concept and the dude's running behind him and it's by the goal line. You know, we're in the red zone. He's the dude that's going to be running out there as your lead guy, and he is going to annihilate anyone that comes in the path and is a potential threat to tackle your dude. So he becomes the best friend of the ball carriers in that way as well. He's the best friend of the quarterback in the passing game. The blocking keep getting better. I did see a couple reps where he lunged into the contact point, but that would be my only nitpick with that. Like the anchor and pass pro. But as far as the route running goes, that athleticism that he showed in Indianapolis, it plays. He's a very, the know-how of his routes is very high, I feel like, as well. He gains the separation. He gets off the line quickly, shoots up the seam in a hurry. I don't know if that aspect of his game gets enough credit, but he will threaten that.
It really
does. He
will
threaten that seam, and he will make the play down there. You have to respect it. If you don't, you leave him one-on-one with the guy that can't run, he is going to make that play. You put like a Jonathan Abram type in the NFL, like just a head knocker, but who is not good in coverage. If you're like, oh, we're gonna stick him on Ben because then we can get all of our other good coverage guys and the other guy, he will eat him alive. So I mean, like, you have to give him respect in coverage. I like all that stuff. I like his ball skills. What I saw in his film, particular utility on the in-breaking stuff over the middle. That's very good. Like I said, gets into that route real quick, and then you're like, what's he going to do? And then he'll snap that thing off really quick, and all of a sudden, you have a free throwing window if you're the quarterback. And in the NFL, I think he's going to get a metric ton of looks in precisely this way. We're about to get 6 free yards, at least. Unless he starts doing the tackle break and berserker thing, you know, once he gets it, it could be more, but we're going to get at least 6 yards on this thing. Nearly half of his catches last year were between the hashes within 20 yards of the line of scrimmage. That's a part of the thing where in college, you respect it watching it. In the NFL, D-Bro, and you know, that's the money zone in the NFL. If you can be an efficiency king between the hashes up to 20 yards down the field, the NFL will always have a home for you, my guy, and they will always have a home for Ben. This is what I was going to toss on you, D-Bro. I've been going back and forth on his player comparison, mostly because the guy that I keep being like, this is who I want to comp to, I don't want to evoke the name.
Are you going
to
steal my comp?
I don't know if
are you going with a former Iowa player here?
I am going with a former Iowa player here.
Do it. Because I thought I was going to shock you with this.
Oh, gosh. Mine right now is Laporta.
Oh, mine right now is TJ Hawkinson. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. And you could go either. Like,
yes.
When watching him, it's like, how did he not go to Iowa? It's like there's elements of all those different guys. I think even Dallas Clark is on like his, you know, the athletic. So it's like the conveyor belt of what Iowa always looks for and look in their tight ends. He is that. So you can think, do not think of him as like, when people are like, oh, you know, he's a walk-on and he's Kansas State. And, you know, then they start talking about these other tight ends. Think of Sanat more as a Iowa tight end. That's what he was. That's how he was used. That is the physical package that you get with the athleticism that you get and the two-way utility. A guy who is always going to give you effort as the blocker, whether it's in line, whether it's shifted around the formation, whether it's go out and get someone at the second level, we need this block in order for this run concept to work, or whether it's all that efficiency stuff as the receiver, you get that for sure. That's the money in the bank stuff. But then you get the tackle breaking after it for the potential of more. I really like this play. I don't know if I'm going to end with the Laporta comp, because Laporta was in rarefied air for us, obviously, but the physical package is so close. The athletic testing is so close that I don't think it is ridiculous to toss that out.
It's not ridiculous at all. And I'll throw some other things at you. He was top 20 in yards per route run against man coverage last year amongst all FBS tight ends with at least 20 targets. Overall, 10th in yards per route run, 9th in PFF receiving grade. Like, all of this stuff screams, and then you add the top shelf testing on top of it. Like, all this stuff screams that people are sleeping on this dude. Like, we're looking at his 10-yard split, 81st percentile, vertical jump, 97th percentile, broad jump, 94th percentile. Just keep going down the list, baby. Oh, look at that three cone, 96th percentile. He is an underrated athlete, and people, like, I think he's going to go third round of the NFL draft. I think that lock him into the third round of the NFL draft. I will not be surprised if he were to sneak into the back end of the second, although I do think it's rich considering the wide receiver and tackle class we're looking at.
I would take him late second for sure.
I don't have a problem with that at all. I have no problem with that, because his ability, both as a blocker and a receiver, I'll even throw this out, man, and this might sound spicy to some people. He is the best all-around tight end in this class. If you marry the blocking and the receiving utility, Brock Bowers can dunk on him for days as far as his ability after the catch and as a receiver. That's fine. But Brock Bowers can't hold his jock as far as being a blocker. That his blocking reps, the closest guy that I can remember in recent classes where his blocking reps jumped out as much as this player, Thor. And I loved Pat Freiermuth as a blocker coming out. Now, we haven't seen that utility translate to the NFL, but Pat Freiermuth had some nasty and some mean blocking reps on his film in college, and they remind me of Ben Sinat so much, man. So really a player we both love.
Yeah, and there it with the big hammer on the inline, right? Like, with Ben, the awesome thing is you saw that, of course, at the college thing, but then also the out in space in particular, and like you were mentioning, bring them down the line, send them out second level, or in the concepts where the third level, he's picking guys up. It's just really fun to watch, and in some ways, what it evoked for me is the blocking of the guy that you comped him to. I remember, you know, of course, I watch all the Iowa games live.
No, really?
Sometimes a couple different times. My favorite dude to watch of the last decade as far as on their offense was Hawkinson, because you got the receiving stuff that last year at Iowa, he overtook Fan as their number one receiver. But in college, he was way more a part of the blocking, of course, you know, it being Iowa. And you would see Hawkinson, he would be, you know, running over defensive ends off the line. But then also the thing out in space would just wreck people. I distinctly remember one play. I think this was 2018, 2019. Somewhere in there, Hawkinson on one play gets out to the second level and ends up blocking three dudes because he blasted one guy and there was another dude right by him that was trying to run by. So he blasts the one dude, and then in so doing, the other guy then gets run over as well. And then there was another guy coming in pursuit from another angle who then essentially gets wiped out by the carnage of the other two guys that he had just blown up. You would see that with Hawkins. It's the same thing with Ben out there in the open field. He is taking someone out, and sometimes he will take basically a race. You know, it's like the Game of Thrones when it's like, I'm sorry, not Game of Thrones, the one on Netflix where they have to play the game, Hunger Games. What's the one I'm thinking of where then you have like 250 people and they keep getting taken out? And then on the board, it shows like, and then they take their character off the screen. that's him with it. Like, he'll just take the defenders off on a concept where they're just out of the play now.
Oh yeah, it's like he's
Squid Games. Why couldn't I think there of Squid Games? People were like yelling. Squid, like, what show is that?
I was waiting. I think it's Squid Games, but I was going to let you get there because you give me enough crap off air about not watching TV shows enough. So, you know, I was going to kind of let you hang yourself with that one. But dude, we love Ben Sinnott. Love his game overall.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums, but I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Cowie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made raisins dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to catch you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on Storybutton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Transitioning to the tight end four of this class, which I think it's blasphemous that Ben has buried this far, but here we are. The guy who blew up the combine, tight end four per consensus, Theo Johnson out of Penn State. Look, I like his game, Thor, and I'm just going to lean in because we haven't talked about him a ton off air. I like his game. I was surprised by his testing in some ways because I felt like a lot of that testing doesn't translate to the field yet. If you look at his analytical profile over the last 2 years, he is not ranked higher than 29th in PFF receiving grade or yards per route run. He did open some eyes, and I will say this, in the context of his game. Penn State, it was a lot of screens, a lot of outs. They didn't use him to stretch the seam a lot. The very few times you saw him work upfield, that's where you saw the straight line speed. But I do think that outside of the athletic testing, on his film, Theo Johnson is a little bit more lumbering in and out of his route breaks. And so I like his game. I don't love his game, but I will give some context to this that he had a fantastic week in Mobile, dude. If you wanted to see a week where we could see a player rise above probably the totality of the profile in college, Theo Johnson did do that at Mobile because he was constantly getting open. He was a factor in all the red zone drills. So I do have to give him some respect for that. My comp for him is Logan Thomas. But what are your thoughts on Theo, Thor?
Yeah, I had Ben Sinnott, tight end 2. I had all tight end 4. Both were above the consensus rankings, which of course means that we're going to have some guys that are the opposite and be lower on consensus. Theo Johnson would be one of those guys for me. You said he was tight end 4 consensus. He is my tight end 6 in this class.
My tight end 5.
Of these 6 guys, you know, to me, there's a little bit of a break after those tight end, the top 6 guys, like you were sort of setting up at the top of the show. And then, you know, whether your flavor is Hulk or whether your flavor is Bell, whether your flavor, you know, Wiley or one of those other guys, or, you know, Tip Raymond or whatever. But like for me, that this tier, it ends with Theo Johnson. And I agree with how you set that up vis-a-vis Theo Johnson of the testing was surprising. And we have seen this over the years with Penn State guys when they come in and then they test way better. Even guys who transferred from Penn State to other programs, they have this quirk when they go to the NFL Combine. So I don't know what is going on in Happy Valley.
They got to be passing around the Space Jam water, dude, like the special sauce. Like it has to be, because did you see Brenton Strange coming out last year and testing the way he did? I wasn't expecting that.
The more topical guy in that tight end class for these purposes was Zach Kuntz.
That's right.
A guy who started at Penn State. The physical dimensions and the testing is Zach Kuntz, and Theo Johnson is eerily similar. In fact, I'm looking at the mock draftable page right now. Zach Kuntz is the number 3 player comparison for, at least in terms of the athletic testing profile, to Theo Johnson. Zach Kuntz, a guy who began his career at Penn State. And now we're really coming full circle, D-Bro, because the reason that Zach Kuntz transferred to Old Dominion was because of a guy named Pat Freiermuth. Yep. That is why Zach Kuntz had to get out of Happy Valley. But it seems like, if nothing else, at Penn State, they have really not only really good strength and conditioning, but they also work on these combine testings, which in this thing is topical because Zach Kuntz last year, the one shocking, I wasn't surprised about the north-south stuff. With Zach Kuntz, that was apparent on film. He could get off the line and then he could take the seam really quickly, particularly for a guy his size. What was stunning was Zach Kuntz goes in 91st percentile 3 cone at you know, almost 6'7", 255. And then he short shuttle was 93rd percentile. With Theo Johnson this year, it was the same thing, where what was really stunning was the agility testing at the combine. He 87th percentile short shuttle with Theo. And then I think he deferred the 3 cone to his pro day, but ends up doing a 7.15, which is solid. But overall, to your point, D-Bro, with the testing and then his game, we're with Theo, very similar to Kuntz for me, where I see it on his film. It's the north-south stuff. It's just we didn't get to see that manifest as much because you so rarely got to see him going down the field 25 yards. God forbid 30, never. Like the constitution of that Penn State offense, it was run, you know, I mean, like Iowa-ish, in terms of this overall strategy. You had the pro style thing out of 12 personnel. They had another tight end who we'll be talking about next year that they use. And then Drew Allar, the quarterback, even though he's a 5-star, it's like the Hackenberg thing all over again at Penn State, where they won't let this 5-star pocket passer throw down the field. And so instead of being used in the way that I think Theo Johnson should have been used, which is stretch, you know, use him as the inline dude, and then you stretch the seam. You use him for spacing purposes, then you can put him on the slot if you want. But like, he can play in line for sure, and then that's how you get some of that spacing. And he can make a play downfield. They didn't use him like that. It was a lot of this stuff in the intermediate range, and then they're asking him to break stuff off. You go out, you go in, different stuff. He's not as good at that. He's not fluid changing directions on the field. It's the labored thing. He's telegraphing where that route break is going to be. Now it's rounded. He's got to sort of lumber into it. Think of like a guy steering a cruise ship. And now with the steering wheel, he's got to go. That's sort of when you see Theo Johnson on what needs to be these quick timing precision type routes, it's just the footwork is not there. And the change of direction just is not there. And that was the way that he was primarily used in college. I would like to see the other aspects of his game developed. I would like to see the usage of him when he is deployed in the passing game. totally upended from what it was at Penn State. And I think that's where you might be able to realize some of this dormant physical ability that we didn't get to see on the field as much at Penn State, just because of the way that that offense went. I think that there's ceiling here. I think there's more risk than that tight end four that the consensus board has him at is recognizing. So Theo Johnson's my tight end six.
Yeah, he's my tight end five, man. And I like his game. But again, we've talked about, I don't love his game. I think that if you see him kind of surpass expectations and live up to the testing profile in the NFL, it's going to be because the team decided to use him a lot more on crossers and use him down the seam and just ask him to run straight and run away from people and be fast.
That's it.
You know, he can do those things. But as far as like,
he's got to get up to that top speed.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Like, yeah. You're not going to see him like, or at least an NFL team should not be asking him to run a lot of like, basically a lot of routes where he is going to have to either sink his hips or break really strongly top at the top of his route. That's the part where he'll struggle at, man. So I'm with you. On to the tight end three of this class, which again, we're talking about where we differ from this class. The tight end three of this class is my tight end six, Cade Stover. What are your thoughts on him, Thor? Because I like him. I don't love him, and I especially do not love him enough to put him tight end three of this class.
For sure. He's my tight end five. Cade Stover, 6'4", 247, 822 Raz. There's some interesting things about the profile for sure, but yeah, can't get to tight end three. Former prep basketball player Cade Stover was Ohio's Mr. Football as well, coming out of high school. He signed, it's a very interesting backstory. He signed with Ohio State as a four-star linebacker, who at the time, 247, that, you know, they have the really good recruiting department and different stuff, and they always have the interesting thumbnails. With the better recruits, they will give them pro comps. I thought it was fascinating to go back and see that 247 Sports comped Cade Stover to Anthony Barr coming out of high school.
Really?
Yes, as an outside attacking type linebacker prospect, a rangy guy. As a freshman at Ohio State, Cade Stover played defensive end and linebacker. So, that, you know, again, the edge thing. They were trying to decide, is this dude, is he the hand in the dirt dude? Can we send him out the edge like Anthony Barr kind of a guy? And then he was moved to tight end as a sophomore in 2022, the COVID season. He was briefly switched back to defense late in 2021, but then he returns to tight end full-time for the last 2 years. Things you like about him with the tape, springy athlete. He does have burgeoning skills as a receiver that I think will continue to get better. He is early on the development curve. The thing you like the most, very, very good hands. Only
very
two drops
hands.
On 100 plus targets the last 2 years. You get the ball in Cade Stover's kitchen, he catching that ball. It just is what it is. He got vice grip hands. He has good understanding of route running despite being new to the position, or at least at this stage of his development. I feel like he has a better idea of what he's doing and a feel for that than maybe he ought to. So with that, you can project more improvement going forward. It's not the thing of like, I'm just racing to the spot I have to go. The coach says, like, I have to get off the line as fast as I can. Then I just have to race to that spot. He has the idea of how to get into that route, how to get off the line, and then modulating the tempo up to that route break. Try to keep the defender off the beat of the of where are we going to do that route break? Where am I going? And then he gains separation in this way. There's efficiency into and out of those route breaks and those sorts of things. I like his stop and start ability, but he appears on film to lack the high end speed to get down the field and consistently threaten that seam. And that was one thing with his NFL projection. We were talking about before, Ben Sinnott, a guy I know can do that. Eric Gall, a guy that I know can do that. Theo Johnson, maybe, right? Like when he starts to get used that way and he's an offense, it's in that more, he can work on that. It's something you can project that more. With Cade Stover, I'm not sure if he ever becomes that guy in the NFL. I didn't see as much of that and as much skill with that. He's coming along as a blocker at this point. I like the way that he uses length. You know, I mean, like he's coming from the trenches on the other side. He understands the engagement at the contact point and different stuff like that and what the defender wants to do. So he's showing an aptitude for this area of his game, understands the angle and the leverage, right? Like I think it's a thing of like sort of putting yourself in the shoes of the person that you're across from and understanding what beats that person. You see some of that already with him, but I think he needs to continue working on his technique with that and also his core strength. because sometimes you will see him, the dude jerk him, you know, with the shoulder pads, and all of a sudden he gets yanked off balance. Now the dude can shut him and he can go hunting. So there's just a little technical things that need to just be fine-tuned a little bit with that. I like the sort of the starter kit that he's bringing to the NFL. I like the idea of some of these flashes that we've seen on film, it both ways, a two-way kind of a guy. But I don't like the physical package enough to be able to put him tight end two or tight end three in this class. Even being like a little bit of a down tight end class after Bowers, I don't like the stuff that we've seen enough to be able to get there as far as that goes. But, you know, for me, again, Cade Stover, tight end five, and a guy I'd be okay with on draft day.
Yeah, agreed, man. Like, I agree with everything you said there. I have him as tight end six. Look at his game. There's definitely utility to it. I will say I agree with you that I don't think he's a top-shelf athlete where he's ever going to be an elite at the position. Can he turn into being a serviceable, middle-of-the-road kind of receiving tight end that can also give you some blocking utility? I think that firmly can happen. But I don't think he's a guy where you're going to expect to run like a ton of your passing attack through. Can he be a guy that if you need him to... Basically, I mean, kind of like the guy I have him comp to, Hayden Hurst. Can he be a solid third or fourth option in an NFL passing attack? I believe that. Is he ever going to be where you could make him a pillar of your passing attack, being the number one, number two option? I just don't think he has that type of ceiling to him. He's a one-speed runner, and you see this some of this in his testing metrics, too. It's where it's like, okay, well, his 10-yard split's 81st percentile. His 40-yard dash was okay at 4.65, but it wasn't amazing. And you see some of the limitations as far as him being an explosive athlete also show up in the testing. I mean, dude, his 20-yard shuttle was a 31st percentile. His broad jump and verts, neither one of them eclipsed 67th percentile. So some of that shows up in the testing, but like, I think he can be a solid addition to a passing attack. You won't see him lined up on the outside. You won't see him beating man coverage. Can he win underneath and beat zone and be a guy who could break some tackles but not be at the top shelf of that? I firmly believe that, Thor. So I think he's a solid tight end prospect. I don't think he's a top shelf guy. Definitely not deserving of tight end three for me and for you. But transitioning this over to the guy who's basically been the tight end two of this class since people started researching this class, and I'm a little bit lower on him than consensus. Again, we're talking about, I got Ben Sinnott up here at tight end two. Depending on the day, I've got Eric All and Jatavion Sanders alternating between tight end three of this class. But the tight end two per consensus of this class, Jatavion Sanders, Thor, what do you think about him? I mean, I think we're both going to be in agreement that he is going to be cashing his NFL paychecks based off of his receiving utility, right?
And his receiving utility alone. We talked about some tight ends that can block. That is not Jatavion Sanders. He will not be asked to sit back and block. When his team is out passing, Jatavion Sanders will be on a route. You don't want him back blocking. You can't trust him with that. He's very interesting as a receiver, and this goes into the value that he's going to provide to the NFL. Sanders right now for me is that dude that I alluded to earlier that is holding on by his fingertips to tight end three. I go back and forth between him and Awe, making the case for either of them, but that's where he's at with me. Our buddy Ben from Kansas State is my tight end too with the ball, and yours as well, D-Bro. But yeah, that's where we get into this discussion. Sanders is greatly disappointed with his testing, and that becomes problematic when you think about the utility to the NFL. People out there are wondering, like, you know, oh, I thought it was Bowers T1 with the bullet, and then Sanders T2 with the bullet, and then everybody else. This is why you've seen Sanders start to drop a little bit. 6'4", 245, so a little bit on the smaller side. And then the RAS score that he put up overall, 5.73, which is 57th percentile size. You know, the testing adjusted athlete is not great. If your utility as the tight, it's just going to be the pass catcher guy. What you were looking for is for that guy to be the athletic marvel. And Jatavion Sanders did not prove that. He tested at both the combine and the pro day and was not able to improve that score any. He's the guy that they put in the slot. And then you're going to have the stuff of, you want him to be testing the seam. And he can do that. We've seen that on film. In fact, Quinn Ewers in the Texas passing offense appeared to prefer him to going to Adonai Mitchell, the other, you know, sort of big receiver that was out there. Xavier Worthy got most of the targets, but again, like, you know, to a man, the Texas quarterbacks appeared to prefer throwing to Jatavion Sanders over Adonai Mitchell, who some people think is a first round receiver. But my notes on Sanders: athletic catch first tight end. When the athletic part, maybe you start to question a little bit after the testing, but catch first tight end who could be a problem down the seam in the NFL. He has plenty of experience playing in line in college, but I think, you know, you at least don't want him there if he's going to be asked to block it all. And even if he's going to get chipped on the route where, you know, you're going to project, you're going to get hit off the line, now we're going to put him into the route, he could get jarred by that power edge where it could screw up the timing if it's like a timing route. So that's something you would have to think about. For me, he would mostly be in the slot, or else you could move him around the formation. I'm not sure how much I'd have him in line there, but he has on film, I'm talking about speed, acceleration, and agility to become a better pass catching tight end in the NFL. I like his balance when he's out on the routes. I like his body control. He gets into that route, into his route quickly, and then he knows what he's doing from there. He, again, will threaten that seam very quickly. High conversion rate in contested scenarios, which is, I think, the thing that you like about that in the NFL, or at least it can help you explain away like the thing of the lack of athletic testing. Well, we know that he can make the contested catches against good defenders, in at least in college, right? High into the Big 12. Texas played some good last year. Early on in the season, they played Alabama. Obviously, later on, they had the high-end opponents when they were in the college football playoff. And so you like his ability to make those contested catches when he's in those situations, even down the field. He's not much of a tackle breaker with that ball in his hands. There's other guys in this class that you would prefer in terms of that. But here's one thing that I do like about it. If you hit, it's sort of like, you know, like when we talk about, say, like, difference between after the catch, like Marvin Harrison Jr., for instance, against like Roma Dunze, it's or Malik Nabers, right? Like they do it in different ways, but Harrison Jr. is still able to generate the yards after the catch, but it's just in a different, maybe less flashy way than those other two guys, where it's you hit Harrison on the hands, he's so good at transitioning immediately to being the runner. And then it's with the athleticism. He'll squirt forward for 6 yards in a blank. Then he's probably going down. He's not looking to break the tackle or necessarily evade. It's get the yards really quickly. And it's so fluid and it happens so fast. It doesn't manifest in the numbers until you look at the aggregate yards after the catch. For me, that is more of like what a Sanders is. I'm not evoking Marvin Harrison Jr. at all with regards to that, outside of that one little thing of like he catches it extremely fluidly, turns into being the runner, and then he'll squirt up field. But he is not going to be like the tank in the open field, like the Ben Sinat, where it's like now all of a sudden, you know, he has the vision and he can make you miss, but he'll also run you over. And that's not Jatavion Sanders. He's never going to be the good blocker. You'll see every now and again on his film where he's picking off the smaller defender in space, and then he can sort of wash over him with the length that he has and some footwork. But every time you saw him get matched up against a power edge, the guy was like, all right, get out of here. And then it's like, I'm going to go about my day now after they threw him aside. My comp for Jatavion Sanders, I think if he gets to where you want him to be when you are selecting him, I think it's a Jonnu Smith type of a thing. That's the exact thing that you're looking for in the NFL. So that's my comp for Jatavion Sanders.
Yeah, I agree with so much that you laid out there, man. And to your point, he's not a train in the open field. He's not a tackle breaker. I think he's more of an upright runner. He's not an overwhelming force. I mean, we're talking about a player that only forced 11 missed tackles over his final two seasons. Can he generate yak with his speed? Yes. Is he going to break up a ton of tackles? No. I think the good points of his game were, we talked about like the receiving utility being how he's going to punch his checks, is you do see the easy and immediate speed to get down the seam. And you do see, like, when he's asked on those seam shots to catch balls in traffic, you talked about his hands, Thor, like, fantastic. I mean, 0 drops in his final season in college, 53.6% contested catch rate. Like, those things will translate, but overall, I just felt like I walked away from watching Jatavion's film and really were, I was expecting more, man. I was expecting more as far as a receiver. I was expecting more after the catch. And I just didn't get it, man. It's like his analytical profile is pretty good. Like over the last 2 years, 22nd and 17th in yards per route run. PFF receiving grade, he's 18th and 13th. Now, the yak per reception didn't pop up until last year, but he was 14th in that. So there are things to like, and my comp people are going to hate, but if you look at his size, if you look at his testing, and you look at his skill set, I'm going to go a little bit in the wayback machine here for Jatavion Sanders, who measured in at 6'3", 245. The guy I'm comping him to, 6'3", 245. He ran a 4.69 40-yard dash. Oh, look at that. My comp ran a 4.69. You're looking at some of the other metrics, and we're going to like talk about, okay, was 20-yard shuttle was okay. Actually, my comp ran his 20-yard shuttle and showed more short area burst than even Jatavion Sanders did. My comp for him is Charles Clay. And people might hate that because they're going to look at the totality of Charles Clay's career, and they're going to say, dude, you need to put respect on Jatavion's name. And it's like, okay, Charles Clay was also a number one, number two receiving utility tight end on multiple bad Bills teams. He also dealt with a lot of injuries, so we could talk about where his stats would have been if he could have stayed healthy. But people are going to hate the comp, but that's who I see when I watch him, Thor.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And we're not trying to crap on Jatavion Sanders.
It's just being realistic, man.
Yeah, again, like coming in, you know, it's with the quarterback class, it was, you know, it was Caleb Williams one, and then Drake May was the quarterback two coming in with the ball. And it's like responding to some of the narratives coming in where we're trying to give you a more realistic idea, at least of how we assess the player. And I think that it's more of reflection of reality with that. And I think if Sanders were to go be the third or the fourth tight end off the board, I think that's a more realistic assessment. Also from the NFL's perspective of the utility that you're actually going to get from him. It's just not the thing. This isn't a guarantee, right? Like it's a one phase player, and you have to understand in that phase what he can do and what he cannot. So just trying to give the realistic expectations.
Absolutely. And just to throw some more sauce on this, man, Charles Clay had 10 years in the NFL, unless my counting abilities are failing me. No, excuse me, 9 years in the NFL. Had 5 seasons of at least 528 receiving yards or at least 74 targets. So putting respect on his name, man. I think if we get that type of utility out of Jatavion Sanders from a fantasy and real-life NFL standpoint, we'll be happy. But I don't see the ceiling that some project for him. On to the tight end one of this class. The guy has worn the crown for multiple years. I mean, everybody's just kind of like crowned him the prince tight end of this class, and it's not wrong, baby. Brock Bowers. Thor, I love his game. He's a steamroller. He's a guy you just basically like, he's a weapon. He's an offensive weapon. You put the ball in his freaking hands and just ask him to go out there and just demolish people, and he can absolutely do that, man. What are your thoughts on Brock Bowers, who is, I know he's my tight end one of this class and your tight end one of this class, clear tight end ones in a tier by themselves. What do you think about Bowers?
Yeah, you know, like, and guys out there listening, like you know, like D-Bro and I with these shows, we labor to go and talk about the deeper guys that you haven't heard as much about, and maybe guys that could give you an edge in your fantasy leagues if you're drafting early on in some of those best ball formats. And then with these higher guys, we know that you guys have heard about these guys all spring long. And of course, Bowers is notable with that. I'm going to respond more because you guys know about Bowers' game. You've seen him now for 3 years at Georgia. Two of those years, he led Georgia in receiving yards. Two of those years, Georgia won the national title. He was an integral part of that. You see the Swiss Army stuff. More responding to the sort of the idea around him. I don't think of Bowers as a tight end. And I don't think that it's, you know, when you're thinking about him, I don't think that that's informative to think about. It's like, really, it should be the other guys we talk about is their class. And then Bowers is something into of itself. I know some people get annoyed with the phrase offensive weapon. If you have another pet phrase that you prefer in your head, just put him in that category. He's different than these other guys. He's the pass catcher weapon fella. And you can move him around and do all this different stuff. Kirby Smart said if they had used Brock Bowers at running back these last couple of years, he would have also been the best running back on the roster. He certainly was the best pass catcher, as you could see, and by the numbers and everything like that. Georgia lined him up everywhere, in line, slot, outside, in the backfield. They did Deebo Samuel, tight end stuff with him, where it's like, okay, Brock, you come into the backfield, we'll hand you the ball, or on the end around. So you get that utility from him as well. The mandate is just get the ball in Brock Bowers' hands. He will do stuff. He will start breaking tackles. He has the very good vision in the open field. The speed, change of direction are both elite. The skill as a receiver is absolutely ludicrous. The guy does not drop balls. Even on the charting, when it was like a drop, you go and look at that, it's like, it feels like maybe the charter just wanted to give him a drop just to say he had one. It's like that catch would have, like on anyone else, I don't think they would have charted that as catchable and given him a drop on that. I did not really, you don't see concentration drops with Brock Bowers.
Nope.
There is no problem with him engaging. Like, and also as a blocker, we don't talk as much about it because you're rarely going to keep him back for blocking outside of on running concepts, but he's good. I mean, like he's good in terms of the effort on every play. He will not, skirt you on effort on any given concept. He gets after it as a blocker, of course, as the receiver, and he's so dangerous with that. Becomes the tackle breaking machine with speed when he has that ball in his hands. That aspect of his game, D-Bro, and I'll evoke him again. It reminds me from the last class of Laporta when we talked about after. It's like, yeah, before the catch, he has what he needs to get that ball, open up the window for the quarterback. So we know in the NFL he's going to get the bunch of targets, but it's like after he has the ball in his hands, that's where the fun begins, and he turns upfield because he has both the speed, but then he also has the agility. So it's both. If he needs to, he'll evade. But it's also the thing, probably more importantly in this regard, of he forces off angle tackle attempts way, way more than a tight end should be able to do, or that we traditionally think of. And that was the same with Laporta. Well, the manifestation of that is both the guys have the power to get through the arm tackle attempts. So then that's how you see these tackle attempts just start to pile up. That's where he gets all these different yak yardage. And then he also has that speed and the athleticism to threaten house calls in certain scenarios where he gets out into open grass. Again, like the effort as a blocker, he's an effort player. Only nitpicks you can toss on him, undersized. He's not an elite accelerator. I don't want to harp on that too much because I don't have any problem with that. But like when you're thinking of like the high end athletes at this position, that was just a little bit of that. There is some rebuilding of speed that needs to occur when he's coming out of the breaks, and he gets into a little bit more contested situations than you would otherwise think. Although he's great in those situations. Again, like you put the ball in his catch and he's coming down with it, and all of a sudden it's the yak stuff. D-Bro, I hate to keep evoking Iowa tight ends. Actually, I love it. I love it so much. Tight end, you is George Kittle.
We
are getting the second coming of George Kittle with this player, and a player also that I like the evocation of this because the type of staff that San Francisco 49ers have on offense, this is the dude you'd love because, again, it's like you have the Kittle stuff, and then there's like the little bit extra of the Debo kind of utility of we can do stuff you don't see with tight ends. The last thing I'll say about this, Debo, this is just a general comment to the narrative about Bowers. You hear out there, particularly vis-a-vis the Jets, you've heard this argument made of like Jets are sitting at 10 and it's like, well, you know, it'd be great to add Bowers to Aaron Rodgers. But in the current way that the NFL does it with the slots for the different picks and then the franchise tag when you're done with the contract, there's been the argument of, I don't know if you can justify taking a tight end at number 10 because the franchise tag is this. And then if you take them at 10, it starts out with this. Again, I don't think that is the correct way to see Bowers of like tight end. Yes. He is a pass catcher, offensive weapon fellow who immediately is going to be for your team one of the top couple options in terms of who you're getting the ball to there. I think you invert that, or at least when I think about it, I think about it from the other way of, okay, but sure, with the draft slot itself, like I understand that. And then against what the franchise tag would be. But once you get done with that rookie contract, do you know the kind of friggin' steal you would get with this guy if it's just, oh, we're going to be negotiating with, you know, using the paradigm of tight end contracts? Or if it's just, okay, we'll franchise tag you? Because his utility, again, it's more this guy you're drafting to be your number two option in the passing game. Or maybe even on some teams, he would be the number one in the NFL. But like, ideally, you would have a good receiver and then you have Bowers. And then all the other guys on your offense are going to benefit from the spacing that you get from those guys. The more space you get Bowers, the more damage he is going to wreak in the open field for the after the catch stuff that we were just talking about. That's how I think you need to think of Bowers. I absolutely, around 10, anywhere around there, to me, he is a perfectly acceptable value. Love him a lot. And fantasy players are going to be all over Brock Bowers for years and years and years and years.
As they should, man. And anybody who's got a problem with us talking about him as an offensive weapon, at me, I really don't care, because that's the way he should be talked about, because that's what he is, man. I mean, put more respect on his name. Not that we've, you know, shaded him so far, but the analytical profile is just, it's beautiful. Like, he's never finished lower than third in yards per route run in any season over the last 3 years. Oh, since that same span, so since 2021, amongst all tight ends with at least 25 man coverage targets, he ranks 12th in yards per route run ahead of Michael Mayer. His drops, you talked about, like, his hands, fantastic. 4.4% drop rate, only 8 drops across 3 seasons. The guy is just a monster. He's a monster. He forced the second most missed tackles amongst all tight ends in 2023, Thor. Like, the guy is a monster, and he is very deserving and should be talked about exactly in the conversations that he is being talked about as a top 12 player in this class, and he is deserving of a top 12 selection in this NFL draft class. So I'm not even going to hear any of this.
D-Bro, one other thing that I would toss out there, last season, so Brock Bowers got injured during that season. Mm-hmm. Most players in that situation, you're going to start milking exactly out that, and you're looking for the NFL. He rushed back so he could play at the end of that season and was not 100% at all. This is a tough kid. He does not want to get taken off. He didn't want to miss the games initially. Yep. In fact, he rushed back so fast in the first game where he comes back in November. It was basically so the coaching staff just could see, like, where he was at, right? And they used him a bit just like – and then the last regular season game, the coaching staff elected, like, let's rest him for this game because they didn't need it. And then going into the SEC title game, because that's where we were going to need him. Obviously, Alabama ended up overcoming Georgia in that game. If Georgia had won that game and gone to the playoff, that's where now it doesn't matter what percentage you were at, Brock. You need to be our dude in the playoffs. Like, that's how we're going to be generating the offense. Carson Beck is going to be looking at you. But I just had to shout out the toughness of that kid too. This is not a prima donna guy. This is also the lunch pail dude who absolutely will play hurt.
He's a beast, man. I love every part of his game. He's going to be an elite option at the tight end position for years to come, and you'll love to see it, man. This tight end class really needs it, and Brock Bowers is going to deliver the goods, man. But if anybody's out there trying to get a jump on rookie dynasty drafts right now, head over to fantasypros.com/simulator. Use our dynasty rookie draft simulator. It's fantastic. I'm going to be doing rookie drafts both on X, so look for that. If you're not following me, please do. And as well as in our Discord for Fantasy Pros. So get signed up, get into the Discord today. Tons of stuff coming down the pipeline for Fantasy Pros. Thor's got all of his positional primers that are all live right now. Like, Thor, where are you at with this right now, man? Like, I know you're working on what wide receiver's dropping next, right?
Yeah, wide receiver drop. Well, on the site, I think the next one coming is we're doing the infrastructure positions on the defense, which I just turned in yesterday. So those are going to be dropping on the site. Interior defensive lineman and edge later this week. Defensive backs coming out. But also the big one is the wide receivers, because this is very – obviously at the top, very good, but also extremely deep receiver class. So we deep dive that one, get into the profiles of 25 guys or so, and try to lay out the case of, like, this is the utility they're going to provide to the NFL. This is the utility they could potentially provide to you guys as fantasy players and people that have been listening to us, D-Bro. They know we don't like our opinions on these. It's just our opinions, right? Yep. Which are invariably oftentimes different than what the consensus is, particularly when you get past, say, the Brock Bowers, and then you get a little bit lower. This is where, for fantasy players out there, you can get the edge on your competition and in real time take guys from them that are at values where they should not be. Last year, people were listening to us at this time. They would have gotten Puka Nacua for free. Yep. They would have gotten Tank Dell for dang near free. And that's what we're doing with some of these rankings as well. So there's guys in this receiver class where you're going to be able to jump on them early and then leverage that against your competition if you're in a dynasty league for years and years and years. So that's coming out as well. And Debra, I don't know if we have been cleared to do this. So maybe in post-production, they're going to have to yank. Are we able to announce the augmentation to our live draft offerings this year?
Yeah, let's go YOLO, baby. Go ahead. Tell the people what we got coming up here. I mean, let's give them a little teaser, because we're going to have a ton of stuff that we're not even announcing here. But Thor, go ahead. It's all you, baby.
Not not only are we doing the day one live draft show, which is a blowout extravaganza at the company, where we have the whole coterie of analysts coming in. We hit you guys from all different perspectives, the perspective of the draft as it's going and all the context with that. But then the fantasy, the dynasty implications, deep diving the rosters. Where is this dude going to fit in right away? What is the long-term fit? What is the offensive system that he's going into and hitting all that stuff? But not only are we doing that this year, we are also adding a day two live show with all your friends, all the boys. And we will also have special guests coming on that we're lining up. That part of it, I know I probably can't get into, but I had to tell everyone we will have a day two live show on Friday. So consider that when you're thinking about your last Friday night of April. We will be here and would love to be your companion show for that night.
We are the second screen experience for the NFL draft. We're going to cover all things and stuff because, look, this is where it's at, man. We're covering this for fantasy. We're trying to give you the intel that you need to dominate your leagues and as well as get research from this class, man. Thor's a madman. He's writing up interior defensive prospects and stuff. So go check out his work on the site. For Thor and myself, we'll be back next week, baby. We're out of here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. If you love the show, the best free way to support us is by leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Follow us on X, Instagram, and TikTok @FantasyPros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.